Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Rolling, it's the Freedom Fiends. Welcome to another podcast.
Sabote, ma tibita.
Exactly, whatever that means.
That's from Pootie Tang. I watched that movie today. Good movie. Good movie.
Yes.
Highly recommended.
I've only seen bits and pieces, but I'll trust your judgment on that, Michael.
Well, I know what I was going to tell you. To continue a conversation nobody else heard. You know, we talked before about that program File Shredder, the free program that acts like a extra recycling bin, but it actually completely overwrites it instead of just deletes it where it can be recovered.
Okay. Go ahead and explain to me a little bit further on this, because I've heard, you know, people say things like, you know, once something's on your hard drive, it's there forever, somebody will be able to recover it. And people say this with cell phones, and cops will say it, you know, it's scare tactics when it comes to sexting and stuff like that. Like, if you take a naked picture you're wearing, it's always going to be there kind of thing. How does that work logistically? I mean, if there's only so much space on a device and it was full, I mean, isn't it going to push out that stuff to make space for the new stuff?
No. And the name of this cast is Minority Report was a documentary.
Nice.
Which a friend of mine, Mike DeLuna, friend of the cast and a friend of mine, said he came up with it, but I think other people come up with it before. But it's kind of starting to seem that way. I mean, there's, you know, about 3 years ago, the Onion News Network did a joke piece about Facebook being created by the CIA and interviewing people that were supposed to be from the CIA, talking about how much money it's saving them on spying on people.
Right, because people just go and brag about whatever they're doing on Facebook.
Yeah, but now, you know, the CIA is openly admitting they're doing that, and cops are openly admitting they're doing that and bragging about it. And
oh, yeah, they brag about it. They say it saves them money. You know, it helps them to keep everybody safe, and they go ahead and scratch the crazy cat spot of all the soccer moms out there worrying about their teen girls and whatnot.
Most people want to use the government guns on other people. I don't. I want to use the government technology. File Shredder, which you can get on the web, I'll link it, is a freeware utility that uses Department of Defense level overwriting to completely erase something. To the point where to retrieve it, if it were possible, they'd probably need electron microscopes and a couple $100,000, which, you know, they do have, but the local cops aren't going to do.
But back to this whole thing, how this works. So if that's the case, if something is always there, I guess you can find it with an electron microscope. That's the only way you can find it? Or does this effectively mean, because if that's the case, it sounds like that means every hard drive has infinite storage because, you know, everything stays there forever.
No, it doesn't. But
I know it doesn't. It's obvious that it doesn't, but why
not? The way it works is when you delete something, it isn't really gone. Just the pointer to it is gone. It's still on your hard drive until that space is needed and it's overwritten by somebody else. But my hard drive, I mean, I've had this computer and we've made a feature-length film on it. I've only used half of it. So, you know, it's never going to fill up with my normal use of it.
But on my Dell Inspiron from 2006 with its 40-gig hard drive that's been overwritten thousands of times because there's so much stuff on it, if I delete something from 2006, not likely to be found.
It might be, though, because it's all scattered randomly across the hard drive. There is a utility, I forget the name of it, that can find deleted things. Like if you've accidentally deleted, you know, a resume you're trying to send out or something, there is a utility, a freeware utility that, I mean, I put it on and I found stuff and was able to recover stuff that I deleted a year ago.
Oh, okay.
You know, if it's really important that it's gone, you can't trust, well, my computer will eventually overwrite it, you know.
Right.
And File Shredder has another function that is called Shred Unused Space, and it works perfectly. It doesn't cause any problems, and it actually speeds up your computer.
Got it.
It's kind of like what you should do is you should defrag first, restart the computer, and then run File Shredder, and it'll shred everything that you've deleted that's still there.
Okay, okay.
And yeah. Speed up your computer.
Because that's the quote-unquote unused space, which is really just space that has no pointer to it anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. I'm glad you've enlightened me there, Michael. Yeah.
So the reason we're saying that Minority Report was a documentary from the future is they're starting to use mind-reading software to try to see pre-crime. And, you know, the Supreme Court has said that putting someone in jail because they might reoffend is legal, even after they've paid their debt to society. They've done that with a child molester now.
Right, right. And that's the foot in the door, the nose under the tent kind of thing, where if it's for the child molesters, then people will let it slide and not realize what a slippery slope they're on. But once that precedent's set in the Supreme Court, like you said, then yeah, I mean, that just opens up the whole pre-crime meat locker there, doesn't it?
Yeah. So speaking of the Department of Homeland Security is starting to install street lamps in select cities, and they're hoping they'll be able to do it everywhere. Street lamps that not only have cameras in them, but also have microphones in them that can record conversations that happen under or near the street lamp, and have speakers for giving public safety announcements.
Oh, that's disgusting. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Minority Report was a documentary.
Yeah, that's just horrible. I mean, I've read articles about the technology for, you know, sort of facial recognition, but taken to another extreme of, you know, seeing if a quote unquote terrorist is nervous, or if they're portraying the signs that, you know, they might be up to something in like airports or like large scale things like that.
Airports always make me nervous. I'm always nervous right. In an airport, even before 9/11, even before the advanced everything. I didn't like flying. I'm not afraid of flying. I've just always hated flying because I hate not being in any control whatsoever to where right. everything, mm-hmm. it's like kindergarten, you know?
Yeah, and that's not unusual. There's a lot of people like that. I mean, my wife hates flying. I don't know. I sort of go into blow-off mode. Like, I just go into my own little world in my brain, and I just sort of zone out through the whole experience. You know, from the time I enter the airport to the time I get to my destination, I'm just kind of on autopilot, no pun intended.
Well, that would probably trigger the pre-crime software, because you'd look, you know, unusual.
Maybe.
I just maybe. Bring big headphones whenever I'm on a plane, just to shut everyone out so no one will talk to me. Nothing says leave me the f*** alone like
the giant big studio headphones.
Yes.
Yeah. Although maybe not so much anymore, because they're kind of common, or at least the style of look is now common with those Beats by Dre headphones that look kind of like wannabe DJ headphones.
Oh God, I know, I saw those.
I haven't heard them. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to spend $200 on a pair of consumer type headphones and not something that was some kind of pro model, but I dig Dr. Dre, and I don't know, I kind of trust that he would not put his name on something lame, so I don't know, I'm undecided.
I doubt they're any better than my $100 Sony MDR7506s, which are stellar headphones. It's what we mixed all right. our music in the movie on when you were here. I have two yeah. pairs of them.
I did love those. I didn't like the wires necessarily. They're kind of like spirally, like, you know, yeah. old phone wires, and
yeah.
they got tangled every now and then.
But
barring that,
I think they're the best headphones under $1,000 from what I've checked out.
They very well may be.
Yeah. So we I have 80 copies of the DVD of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, and I am selling them. If you want to get them before they come out, you can order them via PayPal if you're in the U.S. on our website. I'll put a link to it.
Oh, yeah. Hustling, making that money, yeah. Michael.
Help us pay for the $1,200 we're paying to hire a publicist to make this thing really great and out there. We may end up making no money on it, but we don't want to lose money, and we'd rather spend money and sell more copies than not spend the money and sell less copies and make the same amount of money, because we want it out there.
That's the main thing, is we want it out there. That's always been my thing, you know. We spent so much time on this, and I never really thought we'd make a whole ton of money or even any money. When you say something like that, may not make any money on this, that doesn't really bug me at all.
Me neither. Because
I wanted to do this. I wanted to make a movie with you, and I wanted to put the good word out there in visual form, and it was an amazing experience. And I hope when people watch it, they feel that amazing experience.
So this week, we're not going to ask for donations. We're going to say, go to the website, freedomfiends.com, and buy a copy of the DVD, and I'll ship it out the day after I get your order.
Right. Get something tangible in return.
Yep. And if you don't have a PayPal account, you want to do it by check or something, write us at our new email address at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com. It goes to both Nima and myself.
Tyranny in your neck of the woods got you yowling? Tell the Freedom Fiends about it at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
You know, we don't have a call-in line, but you can email us, and a week later we'll get around to maybe addressing what you say. But if you want a copy of the movie and you don't have PayPal, write us at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Right, and that's a great concept, I think. We want to hear from you, whoever you are, especially now that we're being micro-broadcasted and we have people listening on radios that, you know, we don't know who's listening or how many people are listening, but if you're hearing on us on some form of radio, that's the best way to say, hey, we're listening, or hey, we hate you guys, or whatever you want to say.
And that's why we have all the station ID bumps now. You and I made about 40 bumps this week. It was kind of fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the bumps thoroughly.
Here, I'll put in one of your codeine bumps.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Explain what the codeine effect is.
Well, I don't know if you want to call it the codeine effect. I call it chopped and screwed or screwed. You know, I grew up in Houston and
Dirty South.
And in fact, it was during the time when Screw was sort of at his height. There's a guy named DJ Screw. Basically, they call him the godfather of modern hip hop music in Houston. And his whole thing was these mixes that were sort of psychedelic. In fact, when you buy a Screw tape nowadays, it'll have instructions on it. It says, you know, pour up some codeine or gin or whatever you're into, you know, get a little bit intoxicated, then press play, basically.
Now, didn't he walk his talk by dying of an overdose of codeine cough syrup?
I don't know if it ever came out that that was actually what happened. I mean, obviously, he was not... he never denied that he drank a lot of codeine, and he did die really young. And a lot of the people in the what they call the screwed up clique also died young. So, yeah, in a way.
Speaking of pouring a 40 of codeine cough syrup on the ground, Heavy D died this week.
Yeah, that was a bummer. I mean, that was a little bit before my time. I don't have a Heavy D album, but I did realize that he did the theme song for In Living Color. Which I always loved that theme song.
And, you know, I liked that they didn't put his last words on here. They put his last tweet, which was be inspired.
Yeah.
Now when you die, they put your last tweet.
And that's an inspiring last tweet. It'll inspire me to tweet when I die.
Who else died this week?
You were telling me it was Joe Frazier.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep. It's been a heavy week for us in the hip-hop community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's also, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older, but... It feels like every few weeks or every month somebody important dies. Maybe that's just because I'm older now and I know more of the people who have been around. I remember being a kid and, you know, the old people or the grown-ups would say, oh, so-and-so died, and I had no idea who the heck they were talking about. But
as you get older, that happens more. Like, more and more, like, people I've heard of my whole life are dying of old age. You know, because generally people's heroes are people that are, like, 15 to 25 years older than them. You know, so I'm 47, so people that are my heroes are, you know, the people that are my heroes, the age to be my heroes are dying of old age now or of cancer and things like that.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But back to the Screw music, I guess, if you want, for just a little bit. It really did inspire me and it inspired a lot of hip-hop artists in Houston. And people hear it sometimes, they don't understand. They think, oh, well, you just slowed it down and that was all. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. And if you listen to a whole Screw tape, you know, throughout the whole experience, it's almost cinematic or orchestral in the way it moves. I mean, these are obviously short bumps that I made, and I'm not DJ Screw either, so I'm not trying to say that you'll... notice that here. But the idea, it was almost sort of a whole new format of doing DJing. It wasn't for, you know, club people and dancing. It was to sit down and really experience the whole 40 minutes as a whole, or the whole 90 minute gray tape back when they had the tapes. So that's my little piece on DJ Screw. Rest in peace.
Word.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Speaking of dead homies, dead heroes, I'd like to do a shout out to Milton William Cooper, Liberty Radio pioneer. Died 10 years ago last week, shot by cops.
Right. Yeah, I read the Wikipedia write-up on that. And if you want to go ahead and say who he is to the listeners?
Well, he was one of the early, like years ago, talking about the Fed and the World Bank and the problems behind the curtain. You know, really, the conclusion I'm coming to is like the war on drugs, all of this stuff, it's just symptoms. The wars on brown people, the wars on Americans, the spying on Americans, all of this is just a symptom of the fact that there's a Fed. I really think if the Federal Reserve went away, there wouldn't be funding for all that crap and people would be a lot freer. And the people that are occupying Wall Street and occupying all over the country, they're looking at it wrong. They're basically, they have a lot to complain about. The banks are evil and the banks screw people over and the whole setup is evil. But the solution isn't to tax the rich people more. That's just spreading out the punishment. You want to take the punishment away and the ability away for everybody to do wrong. And getting rid of the Fed would do that.
Right. Yeah. And I really like, I think this might be Peter Schiff's analogy where he says it's basically like a kindergarten class. If, you know, the kids are all hepped up on a bunch of sugar and had a bunch of candy and soda and Kool-Aid and trash the kindergarten room, you don't go in and spank the kindergartners and beat them up or punish them. You go after the teacher who left out all the Kool-Aid and fed the kids all the sugar that made them all hyper. and that's really what the Fed is. The Fed's the enabler. I mean, the greed is always going to be there. You're never going to take the greed away from you know, your businessmen. But greed can actually be a good thing in a true profit and loss system where you don't have the Federal Reserve to use violence and to use central planning. If you actually have a profit and loss system, then greed becomes a good thing because you're greedy. You want to keep your money, so you're not going to take those risks. You're not going to become too big to fail, and you're not going to do things that wouldn't fly in a free market. So really, the root is the Fed and the Occupy Wall Street people. They're hacking at the branches, and they don't even see the root. And I don't know if it's necessarily an accident on all their parts. I think some of them maybe do understand the Fed, but they want to use the Fed's powers because a lot of them are of the type, you know, socialist and want to use central planning for their own ends. So they don't want to get rid of it.
They are literally polishing the brass on the Titanic.
Or arranging the deck chairs or whatever metaphor
you want. An analogy I like to use is they're saying we need a new coat of paint on this thing when the foundation of the building is rotten.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really what it boils down to. I agree completely. And no, go ahead. We did kind of get off on a tangent there. We were talking about...
Well, this guy, Milton William Cooper, mm-hmm. who was killed 10 years ago this week, and we want to do a shout-out to him. He was early pioneer of broadcast radio, you know, on shortwave radio, like when Alex Jones was selling used camels or whatever he used to do. I don't know, but...
used camels. Yeah, I'll take one of those.
When he was selling used camel toes. You know, when he was actually when Alex Jones was a teenager, when Alex Jones was in high school, this guy was doing this kind of stuff. And, you know, he was killed by the police over serving a unlawfully served and improperly served warrant over a tax problem.
Right.
You know, which goes back to like they always get you on tax evasion and they always think they're so smart. Like, oh, we couldn't get the mafia on real crime, so we got him on tax evasion. But it's not smart, but it's smart. I think it's for us. We think it's smart to pay your taxes. So if they want to come after us, it's going to be something completely ridiculous.
Well, I mean, tax laws can be complex, and it's vague how they can interpret them. So I think that's why it's the catch-all, is the IRS can find out something that you filled out wrong or a form you forgot to fill out, and they can balloon it into something else.
I have a guy. I have a CPA that I pay to do that.
I do TurboTax, so I'll take the Geithner argument if they ever come after me.
Yeah, that won't work. Yeah, the guy who runs the money, you know, said, oh, I cheated on my taxes accidentally because I use consumer software.
right.
And couldn't understand
right.
it.
Right, I can't use all this money that I can have printed up to buy my own tax guy. I just go on TurboTax and use the free edition.
And, you know, that's how they keep trying to sell this flat tax, this or the 999 type stuff.
The simplicity,
Yeah, like, I mean, Rick Perry even tried to sell it when he was drunk, pulling a postcard out of his pocket saying, you know, and this is going to be your tax return. We're going to do that for you.
Right. We're going to make stealing from you so much easier. Aren't you grateful?
Yep. So speaking of statists, somebody pointed out we missed one of the names of the statist guns. There's the public defender, there's the judge, and now those are tourists. Now Smith & Wesson has come out with a little sawed-off rifled shotgun, pistol, revolver, called the Governor.
The Governor. All right.
And the motto for the Governor is no pardons.
Wow, is Rick Perry going to get his own model?
I don't know. He does have his own model of some little pussy gun. But is this like they're trying to make you think you have the guns of the state because you have guns named after members of the state?
Maybe they're trying to make the government guns sound cool. Like, it's cool to have guns and be related to the government. Yeah.
Well, that's one reason I don't like AR-15s and I don't like 1911s is they're such government guns. But then again, I carry a Glock 40, which is what every Fed goon and cop in the country carries. But I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes you just got to go with what works. And I think a Glock works for your needs. And I respect Glocks. I don't carry one myself, but I've looked into carrying the what they call the baby Glock, you know, the shorter 9mm model. I forget the number of it. I think it's the 26 or the 27. But I carry my Smith & Wesson right now, and it works for me.
So speaking of guns, at the city council, that's still ongoing here in Casper.
Right, they've got to finish going through the motions to act like they're actually making a decision.
They have to use the Delphi method on everybody. Right. You know, I had a thought the other day, was maybe they're not so worried about guns at meetings. You know, because especially openly carried guns, it's like, yeah, they think it'll intimidate people. But really, it's like if they're thinking we're going to get shot, if someone were going to shoot them, wouldn't they be more likely to conceal carry? Right. And for that matter, you know, since the government thinks that all these crazy people that shoot people take their cues from books by friends of ours, the book Mulan Labe has a guy who's going around killing statists, but he's killing them after they've retired.
Right, right. And he's doing it in a much more sophisticated way than showing up to a city council meeting and gunning people down.
And, you know, his thing of doing it when they're retired is, like, they're easier to get to and no one gets out of it. You can't get away with this just because you're done. Mm-hmm. That's the guy in the book's view on it.
Right, right.
But anyway, I'm thinking, like, they're not even trying to keep guns out of meetings. I think they're trying to keep gun people out of meetings.
That could be it. I mean, they've effectively kept you out of the meeting, although I don't think you would have ever gone to them in the first place.
I think I would have, but I don't go anywhere I can't take a gun, which I don't want to say because it might give someone the idea of, well, we'll just make it illegal to take a gun anywhere and he'll never leave his house and then we'll know where to get him.
The other thing, though, is City Hall didn't have a metal detector when I was there, and that was only a year ago.
No, they don't have metal detectors here. They do at the federal courthouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe at the courthouse.
County courthouse they have one, but not in City Hall.
Yeah, I've been in City Hall a lot. The place that has, like, you register to vote across the hall from the morgue.
From the what?
That kind of makes sense. From the morgue. The morgue and the place you register to vote are in the basement of that building in the same floor.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Good point.
They'll take care of you from the cradle to the voting to the grave.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It would be cradle to the voting to the grave because the place that you get copies of birth certificates is also there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, creepy.
So yeah, I think that they want to keep gun people out because gun people tend to have opinions and it gets in the way of their Delphi method. We already know what's best for you and, you know, we're going to pretend to have democracy and take a few opinions and then ignore them and do what we want.
Right, right. They want subjects. They don't want citizens. And normally people who are gun people are of that mindset that, you know, an armed populace is full of citizens and unarmed populace is full of subjects. The government would rather have the easier to deal with subjects than the citizens who are of the mindset that the government employees are just that. They're employees and elected officials are servants.
And it's not that the people who are armed are going to shoot if they don't like what the people have to say, but it's like they're armed and they've studied the history of it and they have more knowledge of you work for us, whereas the unarmed citizen tends to believe you're here to protect us.
Right, right. And that makes sense. If you're not going to protect yourself, you probably are of the mindset that somebody else should be doing it for you.
Yeah.
Freedom Fiends, anti-war, pro-gun. New show on the Micro Effect Radio Network, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi's fun and feisty weekly chat about constitutional, libertarian, minarchist, and anarchist issues, abuse of authority by police, the war on drugs, the war on guns, self-defense, states' rights, natural rights, Austrian economics, DIY art, low-budget filmmaking, digital recording, activism, rock and roll, and more. Freedom Fiends, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Learn more about The Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com. And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 3 strengths and 8 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com for a free starter kit, a $39.95 value. With the purchase of 40 cartomizers or more by using coupon code FREEDOMFIEND. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now.
Yeah, I mean, they want to protect everything. They want to protect people who sell Christmas trees to sell more. Talk about that.
Yeah, I saw this blurb today. It almost floored me. And this is one of those examples of the little tyrannies that I hope gets people realizing what the hell is wrong with the government. Oh, and the headline was classic. Basically says, the feds want to tax Christmas trees in an effort to increase sales. Now, how doublespeak is that? Okay, so to increase the sales of something, you're going to make cost high.
To spend on advertising to increase awareness and sales of Christmas trees.
Right.
Now, why do you need the government for that? I guess because some Christmas tree sellers, if they all chipped in 15% of their profits to buy ads, there'd be others who wouldn't, who would be helped by it or something.
Part of the justification for this was that Christmas tree sales have dropped from 37 million to 33 million across the country for the past 15 years or whatever. And my whole point is, who cares?
I mean, really, and why does the government want to do that? It seems kind of contradictory to some other government goals like Agenda 21 and environmental things. I mean, killing trees is counterproductive if you're a greenie and just look at the small scale of things, which is probably not really the situation. I mean, my dad owned a Christmas tree farm with my mother. My dad and my mother, before I was born, bought 80 acres and got a tractor and went out and physically planted seeds of Christmas trees. And when I was a kid, we sold Christmas trees, and now they're all too big to sell. But he has land, and he's actually leasing it out for natural gas drilling. But I'm very familiar with the Christmas tree trade. I don't know if you know this, but my dad was a Christmas tree seller, among other things.
That's awesome. Well, actually, my wife's grandpa did the same thing down in Texas near Granger, where he has his farm. It was a Christmas tree farm for the past few years. They've stopped that in the past couple of years. But to me, it just reeks of when you have a giant government, the market is saying, okay, people are moving away from giant, you know, real Christmas trees. They're buying more artificial trees, or they're not buying trees at all. That's where the market's going. So what? Let it happen. I mean, this would be like a tax on horses and buggies back after cars were invented to see why the sales of horses and buggies aren't working.
Or that congresswoman who suggested that we take taxpayer money and have a campaign to get people to write letters so the post office won't go out of business.
Right. This is what happens when you base economic decisions, when you try to do economic planning through the government, is it's always going to be political motivations, not market motivations, not natural organic based progress, but government hampering of the way the market should work. And that's all that this is.
So did the Christmas tree sellers go to the government and get them to do this, or did the government decide that this needed to be done?
It's not really clear in the article I have now. It's just a short write-up, probably from a press release that was done from a Tampa Bay ABC Action News affiliate. But to me, it seems like that would make the most sense, was Christmas tree sellers, you know, petition the government, lobbied the government. And this just goes back to people using political action to get the government guns to increase their own industry.
And, you know, there's a really easy way that the Christmas tree sellers could have done this on their own and protected just the people who chip in on it. They could have created ads and created a guild or a union or an organization like, you know, greeny, green, green Christmas trees are the best. And, you know, only the people that chip in for the ads are part of the greeny, green, green Christmas tree guild. And the ads would be buy a greeny, green, green Christmas tree guild Christmas tree.
Hey, or ask for donations. They say they're going to pass this, or I don't know if they say that, but in the law or in the bill, I guess it's not passed yet, or it's not even a bill. It's a federal U.S. Department of Agriculture thing. But in the rules, it says you can pass this on to your consumers. If you're a Christmas tree seller, ask for a donation. Say, hey, would you like to donate $1 of this purchase to go towards, you know, such and such study to help the selling of Christmas trees? You know, they do that at Taco Bell. They say, you know, do you want to donate $1 of your Taco Bell purchase to fight hunger in Africa or whatever? Why can't the Christmas tree people do that? Or why can't the sellers themselves pay for the research? I don't understand why people have to be forced.
In San Francisco, no, it was the, I talked about before about that weird, like, organization that was kind of government funded but private, that drug rehab.
Mm-hmm.
They sold Christmas trees, and it was fun because, like, it'd be like ex-junkies who still had kind of like a taste of the street in their demeanor, you know?
Right.
It'd be like buying drugs. Like, you'd go down to this lot.
Got some trees for you, homie.
Yeah, like two scary black dudes, one scary Mexican dude, and one scary, like, toothless white ex-meth head standing around like, yo, you want to buy a Christmas tree?
That's hilarious.
We get the best, man. We get the best.
The last real tree I had, I got it from a frat house back when I delivered pizzas in Austin on UT campus. I delivered it to this frat house. They had thrown away like 40 beautiful, expensive, I guess a really rich frat, beautiful, expensive Christmas trees, just threw them out on the side by the dumpster. And I was like, oh, can I take one of those? And they're like, yeah, they're just going in the trash. So I just grabbed one, threw it in the back of the Hyundai, and took it home to my wife because we had actually failed it. I tried to cut down my own Christmas tree, and it ended up not even being a pine tree. It was some, I think it might have been a cedar. It was something I was really allergic to, and I cut it down and broke out in hives.
The whole thing of growing a bunch of trees to chop them down to use for a week or a month and then throw away seems really weird to me. I mean, I guess it isn't wasteful because, like you say, the same amount of energy is out there in the universe, but it's no more wasteful than like spending a few years growing a bunch of turkeys, killing them and eating them on Thanksgiving. But a problem with the trees too is disposing of them afterwards. You know, I mean, I guess now they're doing a lot of recycling of them, of grinding them up and using them for mulch or whatever, but it just seems like a really wasteful thing to me to, I mean, think about how many Christmas trees there are, right, in America every Christmas, like 100 million mm-hmm. or something, or 50 million, you know.
One of the first and news stories I ever did in Riverton, Wyoming, they did this thing with the old Christmas trees where they went out to this frozen lake called Ocean Lake. They took all the Christmas trees, tied concrete cinder blocks to the bottom, and would just leave them on the frozen lake, and they naturally melt down and go to the bottom of the lake, and they would be fish funny. Habitat. And so I did a story on that and called it Merry Fishmas. So that's there funny. Are ways of recycling the Christmas trees if you want.
So speaking of government agricultural bullshit, remember I talked about that survey that the University of Colorado enrolled us in?
Yeah, they sent the letter to your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sent like two letters saying it was coming, and then they sent this, you know, would take an hour to fill out thing about pine beetle infestations, which I know nothing about. This week we get a postcard from them. Dear sir or madam, last week our research team sent you a questionnaire in the mail designed to learn about your perceptions of the mountain pine beetle infestation in local national forests. If you have already completed and returned to us, please accept our sincere thanks. If not, please do so today. It has only been sent to a small number of residents, and it's extremely important that yours be included if the results are to accurately represent the opinions of residents in your area. If you did not receive the questionnaire, or if it was misplaced, please call me at blah 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 and I will get another one in the mail today.
Wow. At least they don't say under penalty of law like that American Community Survey Act.
I know.
So are you going to fill it out? I thought you were going to write Ron Paul on all the answers or something.
No, here, I'm filling out right now. Hear that? No, it's in my
shredder.
You're
shredding it, okay.
It'll be on the cast. You just can't hear it.
I heard a humming, but yeah. Okay.
Our fine condenser mics will pick it up on this end.
Ah, yes.
So we had a suggestion for a word, you know, our ongoing search for a word for what we are.
Yes.
Not, anarchist, libertarian, agorist, voluntarist, all those weird sticky words. I like this one. Bruce Chastain said he heard on Free Talk Live, consensualist.
Consensualist, yes. It sounds good.
I think it sounds,
you know,
sounds sexual.
Yeah, it's got sensual in it. I need some consensual healing, baby. Yeah, I kind of dig it. And I Googled it, and there was a Wikipedia entry that you sent me as well about consensualism, which was basically decision-making based on consensus.
Which is not anything like what we're talking
about.
It's
a little bit like it. It's not a philosophy. It's more of a alternative to like Robert's Rules of Order and using majority rules.
Yeah, because consensus
kind of thing.
Making in committees, you know, they're fine if it's a software development team working in private industry, but all too often it's used in places where the opinion will be enforced by guns, like a city council, you know?
Right. I think Butler Schaefer in his book Boundaries of Order, which I do kind of quote a lot, he mentions a little bit about, you know, if you're going to have a society where we all come together and make decisions, it could be done on a smaller level if it's consensus-based, and basically everybody would have to agree to a law before it was going to be passed, which, as you can imagine, then there would probably be, like, no laws passed or one law passed a decade or something. So in that kind of sense, if you use it that way, it's not a bad idea. As far as being a synonym, I guess, for voluntarism or for somebody who believes that consent is a necessary requisite for any kind of interaction. It's not bad. I guess it needs more development. There was a guy, I guess, who is making a website. I forget what it is, some kind of Keen website. There were no submissions yet. It was basically a news site that he wanted to create where the peg was, you know, we would focus on stories where the use of consent or the lack of consent was the main thing we focus on in whatever stories.
Well, the thing with democracy, you know, and I heard Bill Clinton last night on Daily Show talking about this, and he's talking about like what's wrong with Congress today is like they don't agree enough. And I'm thinking like the problem with democracy is that basically everyone in a democracy is expected to be f***ed in the ass by everyone else in democracy so they reach a consensus.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really it. I mean, democracy, it is basically two wolves and a sheep deciding what to eat for dinner. I know it's kind of cliche, but that's really what it is. People are expected to just go with the flow, even if they
at
vehemently
best,
disagree
with it.
At
best, everybody being a little bit unhappy, you know?
Right.
And a lot of people say, hey, in the grown-up world, that's how you have to do it. But it's really not.
No.
You know, it may be in a voluntary situation where you choose your job, but I don't buy the I'm born into this slavery thing where I have to accept everything.
Right, right. I don't either. I think a social contract is basically slavery. You don't, if you don't sign on to something, if you don't consent to a situation, you have no obligation to follow those rules at all.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Hey, you know how when people who believe strongly left or strongly right, when the president is the opposite party of what they are, you often hear them saying, he's not my president.
I think that's a good sentiment. I think we should all say that all the time.
Are they seceding when they say that?
I hope so. I don't think they fully grasp the ramifications of that or realize that that's what they're supposed to do or have enough intellectual or philosophical consistency to go that far. But there's a kernel, there's a seed of that there. If we could just help them grow it and expand that to the fact that if you don't consent to something, if a law is violating your natural rights, it's no law at all, and you have no obligation to follow it. As long as we can get rid of this idea of legal positivism. I saw a Facebook page today, or it was a post that one of my friends reposted, and it was from a page that said, we hated Bush, now you hate Obama, deal with it. You know, like basically, oh, it's your turn.
I think that's what made me think of this. And to be clear, we're not recommending secession and we're not recommending renouncing your citizenship. Both of those are illegal and treason and punishable by death in the United States of America under the social contract that you did not agree to but were born into. But really, our thing is just kind of getting out of the way of it as much as possible and teaching others to ignore the power of it. I mean, I think that's a really, what we're doing is important. What a lot of people do is important, and different people do different things. We're trying to educate and entertain, but we're trying to educate. So 10 years from now, when someone tries to pull some shit, hopefully there'll be enough people who are educated to say, wait, I don't have to agree to this just because I was born into it.
Right, right.
You know, everything Hitler did was legal because Hitler made the laws.
Exactly.
So, yep. If you think that it's wrong to disobey a bad law, Martin Luther King disobeyed laws.
Yeah, constantly. And he was morally right to disobey those laws because those laws were infringing on the natural law. They were infringing on the rights that people have naturally as a result of their existing, as a result of nature or God or whatever you believe in.
Although the response was a bunch more laws that made people hold hands and love each other, which didn't work.
Well, that's the problem. When you try to solve those problems with the government, you're using force to solve the problem of force, and it doesn't work. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire.
I was thinking about that thing of, we talked last week about how that guy should be able, that idiot should be able to teach a gun class and refuse to teach Muslims if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, freedom of association. There's nothing wrong with
that. Yeah, I mean, the good thing that came out of the civil rights movement was a sea change of thinking about all of this.
Right.
The bad thing that came out of it was a bunch of laws that said, you have to do this, you have to do that. And I was thinking about it. It's like, those laws are heavily enforced on like white Christian people, heterosexual, mainstream, right-wing, etc. You know, and not to sound like Glenn Beck here, but they're not enforced so much on like gays, blacks, Muslims, etc. And examples I can think of are like, there's no bar in this country, I believe, where a black person would walk in and get vibed out. And if he did, there'd be a stink about it. There are many places in this country where I, as a white man, could go in and feel like I'm going to be have my ass kicked. You know, lesbian bars. I've walked into black bars in the hood where it's like, you know, practically the needle scrapes across the record and everyone gets quiet and looks at me like, what are you doing here, man?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, though, you wouldn't want to use the laws to overcome that, would you? You wouldn't call the cops and say, these mean black people won't let me drink at their bar.
And I just don't go to places like that because they'd kill me.
They should have the right to do that just as much. A really great example that sort of turns this on its head. Back when, you know, MSNBC was going to task and going nuts over Rand Paul talking about the Civil Rights Act, the greatest example I've heard is, do you think a black business owner should be forced to let a Ku Klux Klan member in full garb shop in his store or patronize his business? Of course not. If he does not feel comfortable having that person in there, it is his absolute right to deny them service. And you see these signs on people's doors all the time, you know, we reserve the right to refuse service to anybody. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, and I don't know how legally enforceable that is anymore. I mean, I think it's enforceable if the person's just being belligerent or if they're naked or grabbing women's asses or something. But, you know, it's not enforceable for any other reason, like if you just don't like their skin color or their attitude. Or I wonder how enforceable it would be for a black business owner to do that for, you know, a polite KKK guy in his KKK hood who comes into his business and sits down and expects to be served.
How enforceable it would be? You mean like if the KKK guy called the cops and called the local media if they'd pick up the story?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. It'd be interesting. I think somebody should test that.
Well, I know that there have been a few cases recently where students have started white student unions.
And they get in trouble for it?
Yeah, you know, because there's black student unions and Hispanic pride student unions. And like, and sometimes the people that do it aren't even racist. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're white pride people or white. You know, the thing about pride, it's like, you know, brown pride, black pride, whatever. It's like white pride. Like, I understand the theoretical difference between white pride and white power. Mm-hmm. But everyone I've ever met who professes white pride, none of them instill any in me.
That's a nice quote. Okay, I dig that. And it's a good point. But, you know, I guess I can sort of see that argument. I mean, I'm sort of a mix, you know, Heinz 57.
You have something to offend everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I'm an equal opportunity offender.
You're a Middle Easterner. And you're an Italian.
I'm an Italian.
And you're a Texan.
Texan. A little bit Native American. Back in Manifest Destiny, I guess I could have been.
You know that for a fact?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm enough to get a card. Like, I'm probably less than an eighth. I don't think I could get.
I thought if you're 164th, you can get a casino. Let's start one.
It depends on the tribe. And I guess you have to.
You should research it. Maybe you could use the government guns to start your own little Native American libertopia.
I don't want to use my government guns to do anything. And I think I've seen it in person. Reservations, they say they're sovereign.
Yeah.
But they don't bite the hand that feeds them.
Yours would be.
Maybe.
Because you'd have the big, like, meth orgy whorehouse.
Yeah. I've always wondered that. You know, why aren't there some Indian casinos that try to take more advantage of that? Now, I guess the answer is they don't want to lose their federal and state funding.
See, you wouldn't want the funding, though. You just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see what kind of 164th Cherokee casino you'd start.
I don't know. Maybe I'll try it one day. We'll see, Michael.
The NEMA News with Nima Vedati. And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
So the Twin Rivers Police Officers Association, which is a California schools police officer union, has sparked public outrage by creating and selling t-shirts depicting a child behind bars with the slogan, "You raise 'em, we cage 'em."
Oh yeah, this story absolutely disgusted me. You raise 'em, we cage 'em. The shirt, not only did it have those words, but the image was just despicable. It was a kid that looked like he was six, crying behind bars.
You know, my big problem with this, other than all my big problems with it, is it kind of reinforces the, you know, not only the obvious stuff of it reinforces the we're the police and we can throw people in cages and whatever, but it kind of reinforces the how now prison is part of the journey. You know, it's like the prison industrial educational complex is so ingrained that it's like, well, yeah, you will go to prison or you'll go to the army, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how Jimi Hendrix ended up in the army as a paratrooper. Did you know that? He had a pot bust and the judge said, well, you can go to prison or you can go to the army.
Wow. No, I didn't even know that.
That was pretty common in Vietnam.
Really? Vietnam is an alternative to prison?
Yeah. Wow.
I guess I would choose prison because, you know, that way I'm not going to be forced to kill people.
I'd choose the army and just be a bad shot.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, if they throw you in somebody else's backyard,
they're shooting at you.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to be a bad, I'm not going to, and that's why it's just a horrible situation. That's why I say, you know, I'd probably choose prison. At least then if I can defend myself with just my fist and not have to kill other people to stay alive. But this story also, I think, links to, or you sent me another link to, a story from copblock.org about criminalizing student misbehavior. And one of the case studies here is basically in Texas, where I have seen this firsthand. My little brother graduated from high school recently, and they would write them fines for cussing. So if you're in the hallway and you say, you know, f*** that shit, or f*** the government, as my little brother is fond of saying, he could get written a ticket and owe the government money. And then they had the picture on this website of one of those billboards, you know, out in front of the school that says, school starts at 8:30. If you're late three times, it's a $275 in court. It's like, wow, really?
It's not even the prison industrial complex anymore. It's the prison industrial, educational, pharmaceutical, military complex. You know, it's all tied in together. I mean, the cops are enforcing the drug laws at the behest of big pharmaceuticals because they don't want everyone to realize that pot can cure most of the things that, you know. Basically, I mean, this is an oversimplification, but really the only medicines that need to exist are like pot and penicillin.
Well, the whole, it's the government complex. I mean, I think maybe we need to get away from pigeonholing these things. I think that's part of their divide and conquer strategy, is to have some people out there complaining about the military industrial complex, and then you have some people out there complaining about the prison industrial complex or the pharmaceutical industrial. It's all one thing.
And then you've got the pot activists who want to legalize pot, but they want to be wards of the state. Well, they want the state to give them a permission slip, and they still think speed should be illegal, and they think no one should have guns.
Yeah, and that's how they justify it. When they're making their arguments, they don't say, the government has no right to say what I can and can't put in my body. I'm allowed to listen to whatever I want or read whatever I want. Shouldn't I be allowed to put whatever I want into my mouth or my lungs? No, they don't come at it with that principled way. I mean, there are obviously a lot who do, but it really is a pet peeve for me when people say, yeah, well, you know, we could regulate it and tax it, and it would solve all our budget problems, and then, you know, we could put all that money into throwing meth addicts into jail. And it's like,
I really think that the large uptick of pot activism is a good recruiting ground for libertarianism, if you want to look at it that way.
I hope so. And I think it is, just as the Second Amendment advocates ground can be as well. And that's sort of what we try to do with our movie Guns and Weed, was bring those two together. If you can believe in freedom for one thing, I think that is the good camel's nose under the tent. That is the good foot in the door, slippery soap.
The good camel toe under the net.
The good camel toe under the net.
I just want to say, Freedom Fiends, we're not a hate group. We're a love group.
Yeah.
Do the Freedom Fiends make you purr? Tell them so at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So the Casper Star Tribune, the Commie Star Tribune,
or the Red Star Tribune,
and the Casper Journal just arrived. And Casper Journal has a wonderful photo of a bunch of antelope on the front, but I'm just starting to look at some of these headlines and I'm like, bah! statism, and I'm just going to throw it away. So here we go.
Good job. Speaking of that, I had a newspaper experience myself that gave me the same feeling. When I was at the store this morning, I saw the paper, our local paper. It mentioned that the Franklin County criminal justice, quote-unquote, tax was passed. And a little bit of me died, but then a little bit of me was happy. It was basically a sales tax to increase the sales tax to pay for a new prison. And I actually did one of the scary government stories about, look how bad the prison is, and they're going to have to start turning people away from the prison. There'll be less people going to prison. And I'm so glad that I'll never have to write a story like that again in my lifetime. So, and I felt a little bit guilty that I felt partly responsible for increasing taxes. And I'm so glad that I'm not part of that government media system anymore.
You were just doing your job.
You know,
the Nuremberg defense. I'm being sarcastic.
I know you are, but
you did the right thing. You got out.
I got out, and I do feel guilty. And in a way, I'm trying to make things right by being a freedom fiend.
And now your day job is working for an e-commerce site that it's not government funded. It's not tax funded. It helps the economy. It has an honest ethic. You're making an honest living now.
I'm making an honest living, and in my free time, I'm trying to right my wrongs and educate people and do liberty-based media, which is – I'm going to try to expand this too. I still have a desire. I still want to do media. I just can't do it in the mainstream format because it just makes my skin crawl. And so I'm going to be buying, you know, some equipment of my own. I can make media all day on my own. I don't need a tech guy. I was always really great at the tech stuff, always really great at the editing. So why do I need some corporate entity that is in bed with the state to give me money to do it? I'm going to do it for free until I start making money at it.
Well, you and I and DJ, since people just seem to keep handing us money to make radio commercials for them without us even advertising ourselves, we're going to start a company doing that since we're so good at it. We're still looking for a name for it. I suggested the Commerce Crew, and we didn't like that. And what were some of the other names you came up with?
I was thinking of Liftoff Media, you know, like help you lift off. It's kind of cheesy. Yeah. The thing about it is we were batting around ideas and nothing was really sticking. And I guess the thing is, if you're going to have an ad company or a marketing company, your name has got to be great. Your name has got to sell that company because you're trying to tell people, hey, we can help sell your company. If you can't sell your own company, they're just going to scoff.
I know. I talked about the time that I saw a sign in San Francisco. It was an advertisement on a street pole for someone who paints signs for a living. And it was the worst design flyer I've ever seen.
Right.
It was handwritten. It wasn't even handwritten and then photocopied. It was handwritten. Like they didn't know Xerox machines existed. So they sat down and wrote 20 of these at their kitchen table or something.
Right.
And it was, I could barely read it. And I'm like, really, that's the person who's going to design the sign for my business?
Yeah, and so they probably got zero clients. And so we're going to slow cook this and come up with a great name, and hopefully that'll work for us.
I thought of one today, but it's not very good. It was Neem Dean Media.
No, definitely not. Yeah. But you got to get the juices flowing. You can throw out the ideas all you want. And I think that helps it. You know, you got to have the faucet flowing if you're going to get some water.
You know, I read this thing one time when I was a kid that I really liked. It said, if you ever have writer's block, which I've never had in my life, because it flows. If you ever have writer's block, well, I guess I do for coming up with a name on this, but if you ever have writer's block, sit down and write a letter to the editor or write a letter to a corporation telling them what you like or don't like about their product.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll get your mind off what you're trying to do, but get you writing. And I actually did it once and to Kellogg's, and they sent me a whole bunch of free cereal. I don't think they do that anymore. But
no, I totally agree. I think you should do warm-ups, mental warm-ups, writing warm-ups. I've done that before where I just – writing a song, I just write a bunch of rhymes, nonsensical, or I freestyle, or I play Rock Band before I go hit the drum machine. You know, it's just like stretching before running or doing – physical warm-ups before you go to the gym. It's the same concept.
Yeah. So I'm still waiting for the government knock at the door for being mentioned in David Kudrya's open letter to the FBI, ICE, and Secret Service article.
I mean, I saw
the We talked about it last time. It's my update. It's been a week and, you know, they haven't kicked in my door yet.
Right. Yeah, I did see that. Well, these days they can come at you with the drone. They might not need to kick in your door. There's drones in American cities now.
We got a lot of traffic because of that article, but maybe it's all government traffic.
Maybe, but hey, maybe we'll convince some of them to quit their job and not be a part of the system and throw it on the ground, as Andy Samberg would say.
It's like Edna Krabappel said to Bart. Bart, this will appear on your permanent record, which will follow you through life and bar you from all but the hottest and noisiest jobs. You know, I think a way to, like, spin all this government spying on us, or at least like the government enablers like the SPLC and the ADL, like the SPLC and the ADL should know that putting people on a hit list makes those people money. It helps us. Put us on the list, please.
Yeah, it's publicity. Yeah, please. Please put us on the list, please. No, yeah, you're totally right. And I don't think that'll discourage them in the least, because it makes them money to come up with these scary lists and scratch people's crazy cat spots. It gets them donations, and people like what's-his-face, your punk rock friend, are probably, you know, going to these guys' websites and writing comments on them about how evil they are because they hate the federal government.
Yeah.
So
all plea deals are literally blackmail. Discuss.
All plea deals are literally... Well, yeah, because the prosecutor says, you know, you can take the deal or you can have a jury trial, which, of course, a jury trial is your constitutional right, and really it's the fairest thing. I mean...
They're always trying to get you to waive your rights.
They are, because they don't want to do a lot of work, and so they say, you know, you can go to court, but the jury is always going to trust the cop. The jury is always going to trust us, the prosecutor, more than they're going to trust you or a defense lawyer. So you can go to prison for 20 years or you can take the plea deal now. And that's how the vast majority of issues get settled, is they throw out a plea deal, they don't want to do the work, and they scare you and they threaten you. So yeah, I mean, I guess it is a complete form of blackmail, or I guess more appropriately, extortion.
Speaking of violating rights, Gene Simmons, bass player and singer from the has-been pop band Kiss. They weren't a rock band. They weren't hard rock. They tried to pretend to be, but they were a pop band.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons recently called on Fox News.
It was Fox and Friends, you know, the dumb people in the morning who say dumb stuff. Yeah.
Gene Simmons calls for public execution of all drug dealers.
Yeah. Discuss. The whole interview was just disgusting. I came across this on Facebook. Somebody had posted the video. And I've always hated Kiss. I always thought they were lame. Their music never sounded like rock to me. It sounded like it is to rock back then what Avril Lavigne is to punk nowadays.
Yeah.
It just didn't have any soul. I could barely hear their guitars. It was just Gene Simmons dancing around in fruity makeup. In the interview, he basically says, I could solve the drug problem right now if I were president, because they mentioned that he should be president because of all his strong opinions. And he says, I'd solve the drug problem right now. I'd just send the troops into Mexico. We'd go door to door, take all those drug dealers and bury them here in our backyard. You know, the blonde bimbo actually like laughs like that would be a good thing, or that's a good idea. Just disgusting how he thinks that executing people who are just trying to make money necessarily. Although, I mean, I guess the cartels use violence, but the violence comes from the prohibition. Anytime you have a black market, you're going to have people that violence is their only recourse to get business done.
What is it with has-been rockers being Republicans or neocons or conservatives? I mean, he's like that. Ted Nugent's like that, combined with he's actually read the Constitution. And then there's Michael Graves from The Misfits, who's another guy that used to dance around with makeup on. What is it with has-been rock and rollers being Republicans?
I don't know. You probably know more about has-been rock and rollers than me. I just know...
Because I am a has-been rock and roller.
I didn't say that. I just know that Gene Simmons, in this interview, you should look it up on the YouTubes.
I'll link it.
He just disgusted me, and in more ways than one, too. There's also a part of it where he basically rubs up against Benjamin Netanyahu like he's the greatest leader since...
Well, Ace, Gene Simmons is Jewish.
Right, and I do know that, and I do know he's a big Israel firster, and yeah, I get that. But just his whole demeanor was this demeanor of, I know better than you, and because of that, the people I know who should be authorized to use force should use as much force as necessary because we're the vanguard, and we know better than you minions, and I speak 8 languages, and I would say in fluent Hungarian to the French president that he's crazy and doesn't know anything. And it was just like, wow, it was so not cool at all. And I never thought Kiss was cool in the first place, but this sort of just summed it up for me that
and Fox loved him.
Oh yeah, they all, of course they do.
You know, the thing about people that want to send in troops to go door to door to do anything immoral, like kill every drug dealer, even people that aren't violent, who want to forcibly take the guns away from people, etc., those people never want to do the door to door part themselves. And something I read that I really liked in Boston Tea Party's Boston's Gun Bible, he had like an open letter to gun grabbers and said, if you outlaw guns, you're going to have to take them away. Someone's going to have to take them away. And if you send people door to door, it's going to be a bloodbath because it's the only right that physically protects itself as a right. Mm-hmm. And if you really think that all guns should be taken away by people with government guns, why send someone else's son or daughter to do it? Why don't you do it yourself?
Yeah, very good point. And it just points out the obvious inconsistency is the people who want to take away your guns are going to have to hire people. And well, first of all, they're going to steal your money with taxes to pay people that they hire to use guns to take away your guns. So they're going to use theft and threat of guns to try to take away your guns. And yet they claim the moral high ground.
I was like the, you know, one of my first exposures to that thought actually was the lyrics to the Black Sabbath song, War Pigs. Do you know that song?
Yeah, I do know that song. I've heard it before, played it on Rock Band. Amanda Palmer of the Dresden Dolls does a really great cover of it that I saw live at a show in South by Southwest. It's a great song.
I'm trying to pull the lyrics up, but all those lyric sites have a bunch of like ads that autoplay, so
yeah.
So it's crashing my browser and playing five different Flash videos at once with audio.
Well,
so.
Do you remember the gist of it? Can you paraphrase?
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields, the body's burning, as the war machine keeps turning. I can't think of the line I'm trying to remember, but it's, I'd have to sing the whole song through, and who wants to hear that?
Right.
Even though I'm a really good singer. but there's a line, basically it's something about like, the generals aren't the ones doing the fighting.
Yeah.
They're risking other people's lives to do this.
Well, it's like the old saying, you know, war is old men talking and young men dying.
Yeah. And that song came out in, what, 1970? I'll always love Black Sabbath. You know, Kiss were pussies, but Black Sabbath were the real deal.
Yep.
And the first record came out in near the end of 1969, and I really feel like literally and figuratively the first Black Sabbath record was the end of the 60s. You know, the first song they did, or the first song anyone heard from them, the first song on that record is the song Black Sabbath by the band Black Sabbath on the record Black Sabbath.
Yeah, they were driving it home, weren't they?
Ice-T actually did a really good song that loops the evil guitar intro riff in that, called 6 o'clock in the morning. Have you heard it?
No, I haven't. No.
It's kind of a walk through the hood
with
this evil Black Sabbath loop playing in the back. He's describing the hood.
Nice. You know? A few people have sampled, I know Busta Rhymes did a song where they sampled Crazy Train just because it's such a ubiquitous
That's
opening
a bitchin'
guitar riff.
Yeah. It is a bitchin' riff.
It really is. The opening riff is like so amazing. And then I think that the guitar in the under, you know, the actual lyrics is so pussy compared to that opening riff. I always thought that about the Crazy Trey song. It's like, wow, this is going to be an awesome song. And then the guitar is all like poppy and happy. And I'm like, what?
Randy Rhoads was a motherfucker of a guitar player. He was amazing. And his death was one of the great rock and roll deaths of all time. It was not cliche and it was totally over the top. Do you know how he died?
He didn't just spontaneously combust like the drummer and
Spinal Tap. Yeah. No. And he did not choke on his vomit or someone else's vomit.
Okay.
He didn't OD. He was in a small airplane following the band's tour bus and dive bombing them and crashed.
Whoa.
Dive bombing them for kicks, like, you know, playing chicken, getting as close as possible and then lifting up.
Wow. It was the actual pilot. He was flying the plane.
Let's check that fact. I don't know if he was the pilot, but I think him and one other person died. But
either way, if that's true, yeah, that is definitely one of the great rock and roll deaths. Wow.
Yes.
It's a lot cooler than the deaths of all the guys from the screwed up clique we were talking about earlier.
He was not driving. He was a passenger, and he was afraid of flying.
So was he screaming in the passenger seat to not dive bomb? Please don't do that. We're going to die. And the pilot's all like, nah, we'll be fine.
They succeeded twice, but the third attempt was botched. The left wing clipped the backside of the tour bus, tore the fiberglass roof, and sent the plane spiraling.
Wow.
The plane severed the top of a pine tree and crashed into the garage of a nearby mansion, bursting into flames.
Wow. See, in these days, if it happened, it would be called terrorism. The whole band would be put on the watch list.
I know. All three bodies were burned beyond recognition.
Yikes.
And they found cocaine in the driver's blood. Rhoads' toxicology revealed only nicotine.
Mm.
See, cigarettes kill. That's why you should use Vaporsmiths instead. I had a good Vaporsmiths experience about how sturdy their product is. I accidentally sent one of the batteries through the wash in my pants pocket and dried it out, charged it, and it works fine.
Nice. That is a good example. You know, when I first started smoking the e-cigs at my last job, there was this one guy who was like, yeah, I've looked into those, but all my friends say, you know, they buy the e-cigarettes and they just crap out, you know, real quick. And, you know, I've been smoking on these Vaporsmiths with these batteries for almost 2 months now, and they have never failed me. They are reliable.
Yep. So did you look at TV today when the government took it over for 3.5 minutes hate?
No, I didn't. Did they do that? I mean, I don't have a connection to TV. I don't have one of those government-sanctioned TV things.
Well, radio did it, too. Didn't you know that? It was announced weeks ago. DHS, you know how they have the emergency broadcast system on local stations around the country?
They did
the
national
DHS
one?
Decided to take it over and make a national one.
Oh, my God.
And they did the test today
at
noon my time, 2 o'clock East Coast time, and took over all radio and all TV. It was supposed to be for 3.5 minutes. I don't know how long they did it or what they did. I wasn't awake, but...
What did they play during this?
I don't know. I'm sure it was some variation of be prepared to be very afraid.
Be more afraid. Like we said, that's always the government line. You should really be a little bit more scared.
Yeah.
We need to protect you.
It really, I think they were doing it as proof that they can take things over more than a test. Because if it was just a test, why wouldn't they do it in the middle of the night?
Well, they failed because I did not notice at all, other than some comment on Facebook that said emergency management system fail or whatever. And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. I guess now I do. That's what they're going to do next, is they're going to say, well, you know, half the country didn't notice this thing, so we're really going to need to take the internet over.
And take over the streetlights so they can talk to you.
Of course, the streetlights.
And spy on you.
And the little recorders in your car. They're going to talk to you through OnStar now.
Are they?
I don't know if they are, but that's the next step, right?
Well, it sounds like they're trying to make it illegal, or impractical at least, for now, for them to not be able to contact you.
Right, right. Like, they have that right. That's their government right, is to always have an open line to you, the citizen.
Yeah. Which,
to keep you safe, of course.
That reminds me of a book I read a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, me too.
1984, man.
Right, the telescreen. If you haven't read that and you're listening to this show, you definitely need to spend some time with that book. I still think George Orwell is one of the most prescient people, and every bumper sticker I see with his quotes, I think, wow, that's like the best bumper sticker ever.
Which was weird, because he was a socialist.
I mean, that's what they say, and I guess in a way he was, but 1984 was all about the ills of socialism and how central planning was the worst idea in the history of the world.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I've heard arguments one way or another, but again, I think it's important to note that at the time he was living and writing, you know, people thought there were really only two schools of thought on government, and one was socialism and one was fascism, which we obviously here at Freedom Fiends and us more consistent people now realize are just two wings of the same bird of prey. They're both government control.
And the thing is, it's like, when people use the word fascist, they usually mean you don't agree with my ideas and you feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
You know, like when people call Bush a fascist or they call Obama a fascist. And it's like, fascism is a particular brand of tyranny. It's not just tyranny. It's tyranny with guns and censorship. But it's basically all that combined with the government taking over industry.
Right, right.
Or being so involved in industry that they almost own it.
Right.
And Bush and Obama fit that.
Yeah, they fit that. They're both fascist and I think socialist too. They're both statists. And I think that that's why we need to use the more umbrella term that encompasses both of those things, both socialism and fascism, which is statism or authoritarianism, whatever you want to call it. It's the idea that government force solves problems and it should be used to intervene in social issues.
So since they're probably going to shut off the internet at some point or regulate it.
They're going to try. They're not going to succeed. I mean,
you should all download all of the episodes of Freedom Fiends and store them. You should. And there's a link on every page over on the right that says direct link to all episodes. And that'll take you to the folder where you can just right click on everything and download it.
Right, right. We're transparent. And, you know, we're open source. So you can get them all.
You know, go to the 99-cent store and spend $100 and buy 100 1-gig thumb drives and put all our episodes on and hand them out to people.
Yeah.
I'd rather have people do that than send us $100, actually. I'd rather have someone spend $100 promoting us.
Right, right. Because our goal here is to educate. We say it all the time. That's the way you win. That's the way you overcome statism, is education. That's the only way it's going to happen. I mean, we joke, or you joke, about sending people to libertarian re-education camps, but it's just a joke, because the only way you
this
have...
This is the camp.
The only way you get libpair, the only way you get the society where people don't use force to solve social problems, is if most people understand that and agree with it. I mean, that's what happened with slavery. People just realized, as a society, humanity as a whole, realized how ridiculous it was that there could be a legitimate way of owning another human being.
And then slowly over the last 150 years, they found other softer, gentler ways to own everybody, not just people of one color.
Right.
You know, the reason blacks were slaves wasn't originally a we hate that race thing, because they had ostensibly white slaves and black slaves. The reason blacks were favored in America was because they were easily identified if they ran away. When you had white slaves, you couldn't tell by looking at somebody if they were a slave, if they were where you didn't think they should be.
Yeah, it was a practicality thing for
the
them.
The racism came later to diminish them, basically to make people be able to sleep at night while owning people.
Yeah, yeah. It was a justification.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So I heard you talking to your dog and cat there.
I was talking to my kitty cat, Flocken.
Which brings up a new feature we're going to have on the site, is the Shrine of Feline Listeners. Talk about that and where it came from.
See if my cat will talk about it. Flocken! No, he's being camera shy right now.
I heard that. So the Free Talk Live are label mates and sort of mentors in a way, because they're just kicking ass on doing this in all media.
They do the Shrine of Female Listeners,
which
you gotta take your female listener. You gotta take a picture of yourself some way promoting Free Talk Live, wearing a T-shirt, yada yada,
or holding up a sign that says FTL. Or
and they have
whatever.
A whole piece of the website dedicated to showing them off, and I think it's a good program. I think sometimes it almost seems to some people that there's more male libertarians than female libertarians, and this is a sort of a way of saying, hey, look at all these beautiful young ladies who are into the ideas of liberty.
Yeah, but we're married, so we're not going to have a bunch of hot chicks. Well, we are, but we're not going to go, hey, send us a... I mean, they kind of like joke about, like, yeah, we got all the hot chicks, you know, and yeah, we're married. So what we're going to do is we're going to have the Shrine of Feline Listeners. So we want people to send in a picture of yourself with your cat or dog or marmot or hedgehog, whatever your pet is.
We'd love to see some skunks.
Send us a picture either wearing a Freedom Fiends t-shirt, which are available on the site if you go to the gift shop link, or just holding up a sign that says Freedom Fiends, or sitting in front of the website up on your computer where you can see it. Just you, your loved one, and your pet with some kind of Freedom Fiends reference for the Shrine of Feline Listeners, and send that email to talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Right, right. And if you want to put a cute caption on it, a la LOL cat style, go for it.
Yeah.
Like listening to the Freedom Fiends but want them to listen to you? Contact the Fiends at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So, what else you got, Nina?
Well, I did want to talk about, sometimes we do talk about products. I mean, I started talking about Vaporsmiths and how much I love them. I've got another product that I recently bought that libertarians have been fond of. I first heard about them a la or via lourockwell.com, and I've been sort of doing some research. They're pronounced the Vibram Five Fingers. They're shoes, and the idea is it makes you feel like you're walking barefoot. There's no heel, there's no cushion, and sort of the concept is human beings naturally evolved to run without shoes, to walk without shoes. In fact, there's been some anthropologists that have done some research and shows that that's one of the ways that human beings were successful as hunters initially, was their ability to run long distances. They would basically chase after prey until the prey got tired of running and just gave up. So a lot of people credit humanity's ability to run as one of the ways that, you know, we sort of evolved. And of course, recently, you know, all the running shoes have had, you know, giant springs on the cushions, and they're advertised for how big of air pockets they have. And apparently those encourage you to run and strike your heel first, which can lead to supposedly knee injuries and things like that. So I was reading all that, and plus, I just like being barefoot. If you remember, when I left K2TV, the last shot of me was of my bare feet, because I was always in the studio barefoot. Whenever I was on the news, I didn't have shoes on. So I've always walked around the office barefoot, always felt more natural. I recently bought these things. They're the Komodo Sport LS. A little bit pricey, but oh my god, they just feel amazing. It literally feels like I'm walking barefoot, even if I'm on concrete or broken glass or whatever it is.
You're talking too much about this. Now we've done our formula where you talk about something great, I say you're talking about it too much, and then pretty soon they'll be paying a mortgage.
That's the idea. No, I don't think that's the idea at all. I just wanted to extol the virtues of the product and say that, hey, I bought them, I love them. If you run or if you just want to try something new as far as footwear, go ahead and try these. They look like they're spelled Vibram. It's V-I-B-R-A-M, five fingers. Like I said, I love being barefoot. I walk around the office when I worked at, you know, the different news stations, always barefoot. But when I was shooting in the field, I couldn't. You know, I'm not going to walk around the wilds of Wyoming barefoot and have broken glass. And
you'd step in antelope.
Right, hurt yourself. So you got to have some kind of layer of rubber, but it should be molded to fit the same shape of your foot. It shouldn't be cushioned or have any kind of special heel.
So moving right along. did you look at this link about the redemption movement?
The redemption movement.
Are you at a computer? Pull it up on Wikipedia.
All right.
Just search redemption movement. It's more magic word BS, and we may offend some listeners here, but it's basically a tax protester argument that it's part of Wesley Snipes even tried some of this. It's not just for crazy white guys who live in the woods with too many guns.
It's for the villain from Demolition Man as well.
Yeah, read the beginning of this article.
The redemption movement consists of supporters of an American conspiracy theory. Redemption theory involves claims that when the U.S. government abandoned the gold standard in 1933, the government pledged its citizens as collateral so that the government could borrow money. The movement also asserts that common citizens can gain access to funds in secret accounts using obscure procedures and regulations. Huh.
See, I don't doubt that the government would, in some form or another, pledge citizens as collateral. I mean, basically, that's what they're doing with the Federal
Reserve. Right, that basically makes sense, and sort of goes back to the idea that governments trade us back. And when they print money and when you have central banking and they say that, you know, well, we'll go into this much debt, government debt is basically selling out, you know, the future productivity of your citizens. So in essence, it is using your citizens' labor as collateral.
Right. But the thought that you as a citizen can do some legal maneuvering and write checks on this money is just laughable to
me. Right.
It's more magic word BS. Read some more of this.
According
article.
To theory, the government created a fictitious person or quote-unquote straw man corresponding to each newborn citizen with bank accounts initially holding $630,000. The theory further holds that through obscure procedures under the Uniform Commercial Code, a citizen can quote-unquote reclaim the straw man and write checks against its accounts. Its adherents sometimes call themselves sovereign citizens.
Okay, now not all people who call themselves sovereign citizens believe this, but this sounds to me like the Red Amendment or some related thing to the Red Amendment, because it involved reclaiming the true you as opposed to the straw man by writing some sort of legal maneuvering and submitting it to the government and saying, I wash my hands of you.
Right, and more to the point, stop trying to use magic words or certain legal maneuvering to try to game the system. I mean, that's using the state's tactics.
And it doesn't work. It does not work. Sometimes people have success with using the state's tactics, you know, which we don't like, but it happens. This just won't work. If you do this, they're just going to come to your house with guns and take you away.
Right, and I think that's the broader point.
There's a list of people here who have had that happen. And what happened with Wesley Snipes? Is he in jail?
I'm not 100% sure on that. But I do know that the government really doesn't recognize any rule of law. So the thought that you're going to be able to get what you want out of the government against their will by citing some specific law or some specific legal loophole just seems ridiculous to me, because the government doesn't even follow its constitution. It doesn't follow any of the restraints to itself. So the idea that you could come and say, well, such and such code under this amendment says this and this, and they're just going to say, oh, well, we really wanted to throw you in jail, but sorry.
Wesley Snipes is in prison.
Ah, okay. So he tried this whole thing, and it didn't work for him.
He tried something like this. Let's see. What did he do? He's in jail till 2013. That's his projected release date, July 19th, 2013. He went in December 9th, 2010. He's been in for about a year.
Are they going to freeze him so that we can uncover him in the future?
Yes. He used what's called the 861 argument, which is an argument that the domestic income of U.S. citizens and residents is not taxable. And he filed with that, saying that he was a non-resident alien of the United States, even though in reality he's a U.S.-born citizen. The 861 argument. I think that that might be what Larkin Rose went in for, too.
From a moral standpoint, you know, I believe he's right that the government shouldn't have a right to tax your labor, but he's not coming at it from a moral standpoint necessarily. He's trying to come at it from a legal standpoint, which again, as we said, the government doesn't give a crap about the rule of law. Not only that, but it doesn't seem that these guys are necessarily 100% right in this, or right at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It is related. It's not the same thing as redemption movement, but it's very closely related. It's legal mumble jumble about your citizenship.
Well, that is here in the wiki page about redemption. It says one element of the theory states that Americans are U.S. nationals, not U.S. citizens, and can therefore avoid taxes by changing their filing status from U.S. citizen to non-resident alien. But then it goes on to say that this argument has been repeatedly rejected by federal courts. So I guess the moral of the story is, there's no magic word that's going to save you from the government. There's no uncle. There's no popcorn. There's no safe word that's going to save you from the government's S&M tyranny.
Unconsensual sex.
Right.
S&M
rape.
Tyranny.
From the government rape. How's that?
Yeah. It's S&M is generally consensual in my understanding.
And that's a good point. S&M is consensual, so you do have a magic word. You do have a safe word when it's consensual. Government force is involuntary. It's aggression. So there's going to be no safe word. There's no safe word you can tell the mugger. There's no safe word you can tell the rapist. So that's more apt to this situation.
Actually, you have a better chance with a mugger. Because a mugger, you can pull out a gun and shoot him. And you can't pull out a gun and shoot the government. They'll destroy you and everyone around you and burn you to the ground and destroy everyone you love and salt the earth so nothing will ever grow there.
Exactly.
Again.
Yeah. No, I've seen from experience there is no way you take the government on. If you decide to defend yourself with a gun from the government, you've basically sealed your death warrant in a lot of ways. I've seen the government do SWAT standoffs for pretty much no reason, just because they're filing a drug warrant. You know, I've seen it personally with my own eyes. I've seen it. They have a sniper there, or a couple of snipers there with 308 cartridges. They're only 50 feet away from the front door of the house, and they've got their sights trained on every angle of that house. They've got their armored car that will stop a Mosin Nagant bullet, and that's what the guys hide behind. And they've got 20 people trying to extract one guy who might have a 380 semi-handgun.
And they're going to probably come at 4:30 in the morning when most people are the most asleep. Or, you know, if you're a night owl, they're going to study you and come in the middle of the afternoon so you're asleep then. And they can tell when you're awake and when you're asleep by looking at your phone records, by looking at your, you know, cable TV the cable company can tell when you're watching what. And by your phone records, by your electricity use, you know, they can figure out when you're awake and when you're asleep generally. Yep. Although it'd be hard with me because I sleep at all different times of day or night, but they're not going to come for me. And generally, a lot of times what they do with people is, they don't storm the castle. They get you when you're driving somewhere, or they pull you in an IRS thing, you know, and say they're auditing you and then arrest you there for something else because they can search you with a metal detector when you're in that situation.
Well, it really depends on the mood of the SWAT team. If the SWAT team hasn't gotten some action in a while, then they might do a no-knock raid and kill grandma because she tries to defend herself, as has happened before. So they've got a number of ways. The best remedy is just to to educate people and just to withdraw your moral approval of the whole system. There's no magic words. There's no fighting back. It's winning the intellectual battle is what we need to do first.
Somebody keeps posting things on websites of like calls to action, and I keep deleting them. And it's a few different people, but I'm wondering whether it's just crazy people or whether it's governments.
It's the FBI trying to do an agent provocateur. You never really know.
I just keep deleting it.
Yeah, I usually accept friend requests, and I get a few a week. I had one recently that I deleted, which is really rare for me, and I was wondering if it was some kind of government agent provocateur. It was a guy with a Middle Eastern name, a picture of a guy who looked like some kind of imam, yet there was no information on his site. I clicked on it. I was like, who the hell is this? Didn't have any mutual friends. Page was blocked as far as information, and it said he was listed as a female, but it was obviously a male name, and it was obviously a male picture, and I was like...
I don't add requests when their information's blocked if they're not someone I know in
person. I will if, you know, I have like 30 mutual friends with them and one of them is you or Kofi or another libertarian type person, then I will. But, yeah.
I've also like added people to see their stuff and then immediately blocked them and unfriended them and blocked them because, you know, I mean, some of that could be agent provocateur stuff of where they just want to be able to say, oh, and he was Facebook friends with blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, as if a Facebook friend is really a friend. I have like 1,400 Facebook friends now, and I know about 30 of them in real life, which is probably more than most people who have 1,400 Facebook friends actually know those people. But, and then there's about 20 more who I'm convinced they are who they are, and I've talked with them enough on the phone or by email that I believe they are who they are. And then the other 1,250 or, you know, 1,300, I have no idea who they are. They're just people who chat with me and sometimes don't. I mean, most of them don't even chat with me. I think there's probably 50 people that regularly talk with me on there, and the rest of them are just, they added me or I added them, and we don't even know who they are.
Right, well... The way I try to figure it is there's probably a lot of people in the movement, and that's what my ads have been a lot lately, and that's why I will look at their mutual friends, you know.
What's the movement? What is this movement of which you speak?
The movement of freedom, the movement of liberty, the movement of people who are just fed up with the idea of government force and government in general. And I think that's a lot of people nowadays. And I think the internet is – they're denizens of the internet. So that's the way we all need to network.
Thank you for explaining that because the feds that listen to us regularly probably want to know what
– I'm sure they're well aware of it. And I don't care. I want them to know. Because we're not doing anything wrong. Any wrong is done by them, and...
And hopefully we'll convince them to join the light side and leave the dark side. You know, did I ever tell you about the time I was at a Grateful Dead show? Which, I've been to 9 Grateful Dead shows in my life. And I was in the parking lot, and there was, I may have talked about this on here, I don't remember, we have so many episodes now, but there was this, like, white hippie dude getting arrested for pot and being dragged off physically by, like, 4 cops who were being very aggressive with him. You know, the kid was screaming, and there was this, like, 6'4" Jamaican Rasta dude following the cops and yelling at them all the way to their car for arresting this guy and saying, hey, man, you have a job that's immoral.
Nice.
I think he said immoral, actually. Like, or like, you ain't right. Come down to my office Monday. I'll give you honest work selling incense.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Provide him an alternative. You don't have to join the dark side. I know they say they have cookies, but we have brownies, and they're much tastier.
Well, yeah, and the Freedom Fiends, we don't have as good of a pension plan as the feds, but all of your pensions are going to be dissolved and worthless by the time you retire anyway. So cash out now, cash out early, and, you know, come work for us.
There you go.
We'll pay you nothing to go stand in the street with a sign. You'll get laid more,
though. Wouldn't you rather be on the side of Luke Skywalker than on the side of the Empire and Darth Vader? I'm sure you would. Be the good guys. Let's be the good guys. You're not a good guy just because you're enforcing the government law. All you are is an enforcer. You're a bureaucrat with a gun. And do you really want to be that?
You know, at some point, what we're doing will be illegal. But it's not yet. But I'm sure at some point it'll be illegal to try to entice a government employee to leave the government.
Well, what we're doing has been illegal in the past. I mean, we're criticizing the government. It's been illegal with the Alien and Sedition Acts. It was illegal to criticize the war during World War I in the Wilson era. So,
and they arrested people for it.
They did.
And they deported people for it.
Right, right. Something like 2,000 people were put in jail during World War I because of this.
So in a way... We're living in freer times than ever. And I kind of feel like we are, even though they just keep piling on nanny laws. But it's like, nobody's beating my head in for being anti-war. They did in the Vietnam era. Although those people left the house to do it. I don't leave the house to do it. But
I think the momentum is on our side is the difference.
Yeah, it really is. There are more people questioning the government than there's ever been. And in the 60s, it was just students and a few people who were anti-war for religious reasons who were older, but it was mainly just students. And now it's everybody. Even the Tea Party people, God bless them, as statist as they are, they're questioning the government.
Well, a lot of them are, and a lot of the Occupy Wall Street people are too. And, you know, there are elements that have been co-opted, and there are elements that are just completely statist and wrong on both sides. But I think the idea that there's a lot of dissatisfaction out there, I mean, the majority of people know that there's something wrong. Now, their solutions or their ideas of what exactly is wrong, their diagnosis may be wrong, but the vast majority of people in America today, in the world today, know that there's something inherently wrong with the system that needs to be changed. And that's the biggest momentum I think the world's ever had.
Yeah. The thing to avoid is this idea of we need to get America back to when it was good. It was never good. I mean, I maintain it was good for a minute. It was good from 1775, from the first shot of the Revolutionary War, and then, you know, until about 12 years later when America went to war with the distillers who didn't want to pay taxes to fund the war they just fought. And it's like, how good was it during that? Because we were at war on our soil for most of that. So, which may be a noble thing, and I believe that is the only noble war that's ever been fought in America by America, but it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to live in a war zone. And, you know, when people say, well, we got to get back to small government, back when America was good, I'm like, what? When there was slavery and when only people who owned land could participate in any of the process and when
Civil War? I mean, when the nation was destroying itself because Abraham Lincoln didn't think that states had a right to secede? We've had a long history of tons of tyranny, and I think that they're a lot more I don't know if they're even more overt about it now, but it's more noticeable what they're doing because of the internet. But I think that that means the momentum is on our side.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So you don't have the TV, so you didn't hear Colbert bashing libertarianism last night, huh?
No, but I mean, I heard Jon Stewart bashing libertarianism when he debated, or didn't debate, but had his interview with Judge Napolitano. Again, Napolitano could have totally taken him to task if he would just take that extra step and admit to, I don't know if admit to, but take that extra step into anarchy. Because statists can always nail people like Napolitano and Ron Paul because they don't completely take that extra step. They're not completely consistent because they still advocate for some form of government. Napolitano can't pull out the non-aggression principle, and neither can Ron Paul necessarily, because they don't say we need to get rid of the state completely. And as one of our listeners told you, Michael, there's no way to have a minarchist society and still be true to the non-aggression principle.
Yeah. The way that Colbert did it was he was talking about that thing that we talked a while back about how there's the Silicon Valley billionaire that wants to build the libertarian island on an oil platform.
The Seasteads, yes.
Yes, and right before that, Colbert was doing his Colbert Platinum edition, which is where he talks about, you know, if you make less than $500,000 a year, please leave the room. This is not for you. And he was reading this thing from Yachting magazine. There was this ad for a yacht where they were basically saying, previously, we sold you yachts as luxury items. Now we're selling them to you as a necessity because rich people are the enemy and you may need to get away. And that's an actual ad in Yachting Monthly or Yachting Quarterly. He talked about the yachting thing and he talked about this bulletproof limo. And he said that he was reading the ad for the limo and it said that it can withstand 24 hours of sustained automatic gunfire. And he's like, while you're enduring this 24 hours of sustained gunfire, it has a humidor and a wet bar so you can pass your time in style. And then he was talking about the seasteading thing and he was saying, when you join the seasteading platform, Libertarian Paradise, don't forget to bring your bulletproof limo. Because what could possibly go wrong in a new society that has no building codes and no gun laws?
Yeah, well.
And then he said, finally, a new community that's attached to the mainland as much as libertarianism is to reality.
Ouch.
I know.
Yeah. obviously Colbert is wrong on that.
I still laughed at all of it. It was great.
He's hilarious, and so is Stewart. So, you know, I'll watch them. I'm not going to boycott Stewart or Colbert because they're hilarious and they're right.
But if either of them ever want to work for, get away from the partial dark side and come work for reality, they can come work for Freedom Fiends. We're offering them jobs.
They can totally do that. And Colbert's statements also remind me of a poster that's been circulating on Facebook, and it's like the scare tactic poster. It says, "Run! The libertarians want to take over and leave you alone." And it's like, really, that's what you guys are fighting against. You're fighting against people who want to leave you alone.
I know.
People who just want the government to not F with people.
Well, did we talk about how recently Obama was using a campaigning scare tactic and basically saying, if the Republicans win, you're going to be on your own and the government won't help you anymore? And I'm like,
I wish that were true.
That almost makes me want to vote, but it's
almost
not true.
Right.
Republicans won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
Except Ron Paul might, somewhat, a little bit.
Karen Kwiatkowski, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she writes on Lou Rockwell sometimes. She's running for Congress right now, so she's a pseudo-minarchist. She used to work for the Pentagon, but she's really anti-war. Scott Horton interviews her a lot. She wrote a great article and basically positing that the GOP, at least the establishment GOP, wants Obama to win 2012 because it'll sort of quash this pseudo-rebellion as far as the Tea Party goes and as far as the small government advocates go, in the sense that people will say, oh, well, the only reason we lost was because we tried so hard to get somebody who wasn't establishment, and we ended up with Mitt Romney because everybody shot themselves in the foot. So she's kind of hoping, or she's kind of saying that the GOP hopes that Obama will win and people will realize, hey, we got to go whole hog on this pretty status GOP platform or the Democrats are going to keep winning.
I think that's backwards, and I think that if the GOP doesn't back Ron Paul, which they probably won't, I don't think we're ever going to have a Republican president again.
Well, so you're saying the party is going to die?
Yeah, because the Democrats are going to, I mean, they have so much control over the education that they will just teach in school every new voter that comes up, you have to vote Democrat if you want more free stuff and protection from these Republicans and libertarians.
I think the sentiment is too strong against that style of thinking, though. I really do. I think that there's too much of a movement now to where, yeah, there might not be another GOP Republican president, but I don't think that that means the Democrats will have a monopoly on it. I think either another party emerges or the system implodes on itself. I'm personally hoping for the latter. Not necessarily because I want to see the shit hit the fan, but because I want to see people seeking other ways of organizing society other than the way politics works.
Word. And on that note,
the Freedom Fiends are going to say peace, chunk the deuce. Go ahead and listen to some more screw music.
Worms.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom Fiends, one fact that I got to make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.